Hello everyone, welcome to the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast on this Monday, or Wes Houlihan post 2 days, or whatever Pete Raven is going to decide to call it. We're here at Archant Towers to reflect on Norwich City's final home game of the 2017-18 season. I expect we're probably going to talk about Wes Houlihan. We'll certainly have plenty of other bits and pieces to talk about, Alex Tetti among them. I am Michael Bailey. I am with, there's four of us. This is special. I've already mentioned his name, Peter Raven. How are you doing, Pete?
Very well, thank you, Michael. Everyone seems to be asking me that quite a lot.
We've all been quite worried for you, let's be honest. But you're not crying now, so that's good.
I'm good.
You're good. Chief Norwich City correspondent, Paddy Davitt. Paddy, you well?
Good, pal, yeah. All good.
Good man.
Perfect day.
It was the perfect, not today. It's
not
horrible
today,
weather
no.
out there, but the scripts and all that were written and then duly acted out. And our Norwich City colleague, Dave Fraser. Dave, how are you? Now, you've got Senior Cup action tonight, so you've got a big, busy night ahead of you.
Down on Town v Norwich United in the Norfolk Senior Cup final, and it's freezing cold and pouring down with rain, so I can't wait.
More of that later, folks. Enjoy that. Pete, I feel like we should come first to you, because let's just get the Wes Houlihan stuff done and dusted. I think the three of us are probably a bit Wesed out, to be honest. It's been a pretty long week. So, your good self... Where did that occasion at Carrow Road rank for you on Saturday?
As an occasion, at the top. I mean, as a football match, not very high at all. It's just the whole day was... It wasn't over the top. It was. I think it was just right. The club handled it very well. The player did himself until he went off. I think they could have asked for more, because you're a goal and an assist. Farker seemed to highlight the fact that it was his first goal of the season, so that tells you all you need to know really why he's going. But best player on the pitch like he normally is.
All right, here's a question that, you know, if you answer this one way, then we can take it as definitive. Would you have wanted Wes to be here for another season, and not just because you like him, but because of his abilities and where he's at in his career?
No, I think it's the right time. Despite being the best player on the pitch, it's few and far between, and I guess wages would come into it as well. It's that having that influence, and what would happen next season? Would he have played like four or five games, and then you wouldn't have had the exit that he had on Saturday? I think it was the right time. Had they given another year, I don't think there'd be too many complaints, but there shouldn't be, because he hasn't been.
If even Pete's saying it, Pad, then it must be the right time. I mean, we it was a great occasion. Pete sort of covered that off really nicely. I think we kind of saw on Saturday moments why it has come to an end, you know, him being slightly overrun in midfield on occasion and losing the ball. Likewise, we kind of saw what he can still offer, the kind of player he is, and a wonderful goal and assist to mark a special day.
Yeah, all of the above, but I think the reality is it's going to have to be some brutal decision. And to be honest, this isn't the first. If you go back 12 months, that was a brutal culling of those seven headlined by John Ruddy, and that was driven purely by the finances. And it's the same scenario. It's been the same scenario in the intervening windows. Everything Norwich do now, it's literally trimming all the fat and all the gristle, to go into a bizarre food analogy.
You call it as gristle.
Sorry, no. We'll stop there. But the point I'm trying to make is that literally everything has to absolutely pay its way now. And as Pete rightly alluded, and you look at the minutes he had on the pitch this season, he was a luxury item in a squad that now has to be fit for purpose. And that's sad. And that detaches the emotion from it and the romanticism, but that is the reality, I'm afraid. And it won't be the last type of decision along those lines where they basically, Weber completely takes the emotion out of it and just has to deal with what he's got to deal with, which is a difficult financial landscape. So, and then within that context, you know, it's very rare. I was speaking to Ian Clarke earlier today to basically, all the planets did align on Saturday, you know, for him to play, to score, to have the assist, to win the game, to get the ovation he got in the 80, whatever it was, second minute, and then to go around with his family. I mean, it was just perfect. You know, you could not have mapped out a better send-off for the lad, and that's pretty rare. So, fair play to him. Enjoy his... whatever he does next.
Yeah, spot on. Thank God he's not playing at Hillsborough on Sunday. He's avoided that one. Just with you, Pad, you've been covering the club... Well, how long has it been now? It's longer than I've been in this job, so it must be 12, 14 years, something like that.
Well, yes and no, but I mean, mainly since the Premier League era, when, incidentally, Wes scored the first goal. Scored the first goal. 2011. So from then onwards, basically.
So I mean, we'll get wrapped up in the whole, you know, history debate and all that sort of thing. But where does Wes stand for you in terms of how long you've been covering the club as a player and in the rankings?
As a player, well, I mean, if I had to, not that I'm going to do it now, but if I had to, over those 7 or 8 years, pick an 11, he would be probably the first name on the team sheet, just because I'm talking about in his pomp, you know, because he was something completely different into what Norwich have. You know, the type of midfielder he was, his grace and his ability in tight spaces, just a twist and turn and pick a pass. Yes, he wasn't the full package, but let's be brutally honest, if he was the full package, he wouldn't have been at Norwich City. He'd have been playing the top end of the game. So a special player, and I think you saw that. I mean, obviously there was this line about, you know, and we all know what happened around January 2014 with the transfer request and the flirtation with Villa, set against obviously a situation where basically Houghton didn't really fancy him. He wasn't playing, kicking his heels, and he wanted to go and play. So I wouldn't reproach him for that, but I think ultimately, to bring it right forward to what we saw Saturday afternoon, that type of reaction from the Norwich fan base, not just Pete, tells you how special the guy was, because you can't fake that. You know, to get that type of send off just tells you everything you need to know about Wes Hooland and Norwich.
This will be a quick answer, Pete. Your favourite ever Norwich player?
Yeah.
Dude. Dave.
Oh, what? David Nielsen, close second.
I feel like I'm going to get quite close to swearing in this podcast. I almost did then. But Dave, I mean, in terms of, I mean, you've seen obviously loads of Norwich as well, and we have these sort of standout moments that take place at Carrow, but that goal on the stroke of half time when Norwich were one down, everyone's going to boo them off at half time. I think it was pretty lackluster. It was, you know, it was average in the first half. The moment he took that shot, Wes, and it took the deflection, I could tell it was going to dip under the bar. Obviously the rest was then ridiculous, but just remarkable, isn't it, how these things all pan out?
It was. Well, it was a very sideways first half. I thought Moritz Leitner probably had his worst half as a Norwich player, because he just kept, well, they all kept passing it sideways. But it was one of those moments that, yeah, you'll always remember. It almost was, it was in slow motion. Oh, Wes is going to shoot. Oh, that's almost, it's on target. And then it hit the post and everyone had to hesitate just for half a second, didn't they? And then watch it slowly roll in. It was just, it was hilarious, really. It was, everyone just couldn't believe that the story had unfurled like that, really. It was just brilliant. And the cheer afterwards was, you know, as memorable as when he went off, which was probably what we were all expecting. And, yeah, he gets an assist, a fairly straightforward five-yard pass, wasn't it? But a decent performance. I mean, most people know I do our player watch for the paper on Mondays, and obviously did Wes, and there were some negative notes in there as well. But
Dave,
I just,
you're meanie.
They didn't make it into the final cut though in the paper, okay, because I didn't think that was in the spirit of it. Really, it was, you know, it felt like a testimonial. It almost feels now like, do we need a testimonial? Because you're never going to top what happened on Saturday. You're never going to be able to engineer the fun and the, which is a strange situation because everyone before that game was saying, you know, testimonial is sort of a must-have, but I don't really know if it is needed now, to be honest. But the thing with Wes, the season which always stands out for me was the Championship season, when he was the tip of the diamond under Lambert, and of course the League One season, but that's slightly different, when the team was built around him. And when he lost the ball, as he does and as he did on Saturday several times, Leeds nearly scored late on, or not long before he came off, because he hadn't tracked his man, although he was being played on the right, which, as we all know, is not his position. When he was played at the tip of the diamond in an attacking playmaker role, he was almost unique. Certainly by Championship standards, he was so effective and so exciting to watch. But we've seen it too often under Alex Neil as well as under Daniel, that he's been stuck out on the right or on the left, and that's not his position. So I'm with Pete. I think it's the right time. It's come to a great fitting end, and we can all remember him fondly.
And will indeed. Thank you very much, Wesley Houlihan. Second half performance, Pads, was good, wasn't it, on Saturday? I think there's a caveat in terms of Leeds' interest in the game waned significantly as full-time approached over the course of that second half, and any threat they had and carried in the first kind of disappeared. But, you know, there were some good signs there. I don't know if Norwich would have been quite as unbalanced in midfield had they not had to play Wes, because ultimately you had Wes, Leitner, Vrancic, Madison, or, you know, all buzzing away. And maybe Daniel Farker would quite like that, but it's not the most appealing in a lot of Championship games, as we've seen over the course of the season. But I think there was enough there for Carrow Road, aside from all the razzmatazz around it, to go, okay, there's some positives there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Hernandez as well, who clearly, everything Farker says now makes you think that he wants him in his 11, looking forward to next season. So, yeah, I think the balance would have been different were it not to accommodate Wes on Saturday. But, yeah, it's hard to gauge because, as you say, Leeds did seem to tail off. I thought they were decent first half, as sort of lacklustre as Norwich were. I thought they pressed high and they were aggressive and they were getting in Norwich's faces. And but there's something not, unsurprisingly, with Leeds, there's something definitely not right there, because Heckingbottom already is getting it in the neck from Leeds supporters. So, I don't see him being long for that position. So, yeah, and you could see that in the second half. There was seemingly a lack of, I don't know, belief maybe in what the managers were asking them to do. And conversely, Norwich, fair play, kept on and moved through the gears and clearly were desperate to give Wes what he was hoping for, which was a win. So you put the two sort of processes together, I think that probably explains a lot of, rather than, great, we're now set up, Norwich, Carrow, next season, bring it on. I still think there's a good few issues to be resolved, notably the top end of the pitch.
Oh, yes, indeed. The Leeds fans did join in, I believe, with the applause for Paul Rudd on the 48th minute, which... And that was a fantastic moment around the ground. They did audibly boo off Wes Houlihan when he went off. Just saying, that's physically what happened. Pete, in terms of the summer, I think we should. I mean, the game was the game. Norwich have got Sheffield Wednesday coming up. The race for 12th and the race to finish ahead of Ipswich will be settled in Yorkshire on Sunday. But in terms of attentions to the summer, we're already going to start looking at who's played their last game, who Norwich might well retain. James Maddison was named player of the season, Grant Hanley second, with Angus Gunn third, and, you know, two of those three may not well be at the club next year. You look at that team that played on Saturday, what are your feelings in terms of what you'll see in August?
It's difficult, because usually during the lap of, what's it called these days, appreciation, rather than victory lap,
The more media people they let do that, the less appreciation there'll be.
Yeah, there's more view boys on the pitch than there were players, aren't there?
I'm not complaining. We got a good video out of it.
Also, noticed that sort of how the age of the team has gone down, and there wasn't as many kids as there normally is, because probably haven't got any.
Pinto's little one was there, I noticed.
But normally that, you can always try and look for some clues as to who's played their last game, and with like shirts going into the crowd and waving and sort of hanging around a bit longer. There wasn't a great deal of that. Obviously the biggest bit over the summer is going to be Madison, like where and how much, and then what Norwich get in terms of to spend with that. If anyone in that stadium thinks he'll still be there next season, I'd be very surprised. Reed, interesting one. I think if Southampton stay up, that's our best chance of keeping him, because he's not going to play in the top flight for them. But if they go down, they're going to lose players, they might want to hang on to him. I'd like to see him back here. And Gunn, I guess, it's Man City's call, isn't it?
Yeah, it will be indeed.
I think I read somewhere that someone did an opinion piece on and just said that he didn't expect like 7 or 8 of those players to be here next season, which seemed quite harsh. But if anyone comes in for Murphy or Lewis, if the price is right, they're not going to say no, are they?
And the more experienced players as well, like Nelson Oliveira, and I guess maybe Ivo is a discussion, Ivo Pinto, given he's not really playing at the moment. How do you see it shaking out, Dave? You got to see everyone say their goodbyes to Carrow Road for the season.
Yeah, I'm not expecting Madison to be here. I think they frankly need that money just to balance everything up, and from that point they can push on with the finances under control. I would like to see Leitner back, despite not thinking he had the best game. I don't really think that deep role suits him that well. I'd have preferred to see Mario Vrancic sitting deeper, really. Although it's quite fluid, the Norwich midfield at the moment, isn't it? That, like you say, they all buzz about. One thing that I think Wes did almost offer a little bit of on Saturday was that he got on the ball and he turned forward, and his passes were generally forward. And that's something that that they can learn from. But I thought Vrančić was very good, so I'm hoping that he can sort of really kick on next year. Reed, I'm still not convinced by Reed, really. If you get him back on loan for another year, if they stay up, fair enough. But I wouldn't be forking out much money for him in the situation Norwich are in financially. I think he's okay. I think he's a good squad player, but I wouldn't say he's been exceptional at right back or central midfield. Certainly not central midfield. If you've got Ben Godfrey back, Louis Thompson maybe. Although I suppose he's gonna need a loan. The midfield is not looking too much of a problem. But I think what I'd like to see more of, and maybe what we haven't seen from Leitner, can he replace Maddison? Can he shoot from range? Can he hit the target with free kicks and things like that? Because Maddison has been really good at that this season, hasn't he? No one's really shown that drive that maybe Johnny Howson had in the past of getting into the box and supporting the striker. So I think there's still a lot of work to do there. And I wouldn't expect Nelson Oliveira to be leading the line next season based on what we saw again on Saturday, because he's just... It seems fairly basic. Just stay near the two central defenders, annoy them, stay on their shoulder, try and get in behind. But, at times he was at left back and right back position trying to pick up the ball. I don't know whether that's a lack of intelligence or whether he's trying too hard to impress or what, but that's not how you score goals, is it? And I don't know. I think Daniel Farke's still got a lot on his plate to get this Norwich team into anything like playoff contention.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, James Maddison basically has been the sole midfield goal threat all season, hasn't he, Pad? And you don't need to ask you to wax lyrical about him. He's a Cov boy, so you do it automatically. But where he goes next will obviously be of interest to so many Norwich fans, and in terms of how they rebuild without him. He has been phenomenal this year. I think we knew he was going to be player of the season by about September time.
Yeah, I thought he's always a really engaging guy to listen to as well. I thought he did some very nice post-match stuff, and he sounded genuine. That he said he was quite choked when it was announced on the pitch before the game. Now, quite rightly, he should have expected to be collecting that trophy, but the fact that he was still genuinely touched by, getting that top of, one in a long, long line of, his mantelpiece is ridiculous this season. you did get the sense from him, listening to him, that he did really feel that was one of the best awards he could win, because it's a recognition of the work he's done all season, and also that the fans have appreciated what he's done. I think I would just throw one name into the mix here in terms of the what if. You've got Kenny McLean coming in, and now that guy can score goals by all accounts. Maddison himself has said to us that the step up is the thing that he has to answer. Can he go from the top end of the Scottish Premiership into the Championship? If he handles that, then you might have an answer or two there right already in the building, because you look at his stats and they're pretty healthy, and he's only 26. He's now got himself into the Scotland setup under Alec McLeish. His best years now should be ahead of him. He's clearly, by all accounts, made of the right stuff. He's got the right mentality as well. There was those quotes, I think, when he came out with there about 2 or 3 weeks ago, where it wasn't, I'm just going down there to maybe try and impress and maybe try and get it. He was literally, I'm going down there and I expect to be in the 11 on the opening day of the season, which is very self-confident, and I like to hear that. So I'm really looking forward to seeing this guy in pre-season, and if he delivers what he potentially could do, then that might allow a lot of other pieces in the midfield jigsaw to slot into place.
Yeah, great point. Obviously, once Hillsborough's out of the way, and we'll have a quick chat about that in a bit, we'll be on meltdown watch, which is generally what happens in the summer. We get one or two. I'm not saying it's good or bad, justified or unjustified. It seems to happen. So there we go. But we could have a bit of positive news before things come on in terms of Alex Tetti. I think we've all resigned to him leaving. Now the mood music seems to be significantly different. I don't think anything's sorted necessarily, but maybe there's a significant chance Alex Tetti will be a Norwich City player for, maybe the next two seasons.
Yeah, that seems to be the way the wind is blowing. I think it'll become clear, if not before Sheffield Wednesday, then certainly very, very soon after. And it'd be interesting to get the boys' take on it, but I think it's a good move. Not in the sense that he's going to be, because clearly his body is not allowing him now to play 46 league games for the next two seasons. But, he's played 21, he's had 21 league starts this season. And if you're losing Wes, and on the back of the experienced players who went in the last two windows. There might be more out the door in this coming summer. I think on that measure alone, you if you can financially make it possible, keep him around the place, because he is a very, you know, influential, I think, potentially player for the likes of a Godfrey, the likes of a Cantwell, not obviously like for like in terms of Cantwell, but certainly Godfrey and even Thompson, I suppose, to learn off him for another year or two, because they're not the finished article, a long way short of it. And okay, again, you know, we talked about Wes, there's things that he, you almost have to take as baggage with him, and it's the same with Tete. You know, he's never going to be a lightener in terms of passing the ball, but I think what he does offer you is something they probably don't have enough of, and certainly that experience factor. And to me, it shows quite a pragmatic side to Weber and Farker, because at the start of the season, if you recall, Harrison Reed was the man. You know, Tete was nowhere near it, and he wasn't injured, he wasn't unfit, he just wasn't making the game because it wasn't the way Farker wanted to go. But the watershed game at Millwall after that, Tete came back in, he paired him alongside Tribal, and the rest is history. So the fact that that has now got to the point, if we're led to believe where it has done, that they clearly want him to stay, that to me is quite a good sign that Farker is now not the idealistic coach who came in from the Bundesliga 2 and wanted to, well, Bundesliga 4th tier, but Dortmund 2, and had a very fixed way of how he wanted to play, because that clearly wasn't working. He didn't have the personnel to make that work. And if he's now shown a willingness to maybe adapt to the Championship, then with a one eye on to next season, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, brilliant. And I guess with Tete, it kind of feels, presuming he does sign it and he's happy with it, it's kind of a one-year contract spread over 2 years, because he's probably going to be slashing his wages in half just for Norwich to be able to afford him. Likewise, I do like this idea of him and Ben Godfrey basically sharing one of those, you know, significant holding midfield roles, because I think while we can all sit here going, Ben Godfrey coming in, it'll be brilliant, the guy's never played Championship football before properly, certainly in that role, he was here, there and everywhere before, so I quite like that dynamic of him, them both being able to offer that sort of thing up. But I guess you can never guarantee in terms of fitness and where he's at and what he will actually be able to deliver. But is it something you would be happy to see, Dave?
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised, but I think that would be ideal in terms of bringing Godfrey through fully, because it would take the pressure off him to a certain extent. They could dip him out when they need to. I mean, there would be plenty who would argue they could have done that this season, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, Ben's obviously going to come back far, far better for his season out on loan. And is going to be close to things as long as he has a good pre-season. He had a good pre-season last year, to be fair, didn't he? So, and he wasn't far off the standard. So I think that could work really well in terms of him. And as we mentioned with Louis Thompson, I've got some stuff from, most people probably saw the boxing stuff from last week, had a chat with Louis there, and he's in the final stages of his rehab, will be working hard over the summer, not really having a break, in with his eyes firmly set on being ready to mix it with the rest of the squad for pre-season. So, you know, rupturing your Achilles once, let alone twice, is so serious that they're going to treat him with kid gloves, aren't they, in that he may need a loan or something to get him fully up to speed. But, you know, if he could regain where he was in that Leeds game before he got injured, then that's going to be a massive asset. And if Alex Tete can then, the three of them as defensive options, and then of course Tribal came back as well on Saturday, which is great to see. I'm a big fan of him. I think that shows that Daniel's got some real options there. But I suppose they had to offer Tete 2 years to get him interested in staying, so he'll be what, pushing 35 by the time he's done. Maybe even they've said, you know, look at all this adulation Wes has got, we can give you a bit of that come 2 years time.
Yeah, absolutely, that would be interesting if we get some of that. You know, everyone loves Alex Tete. It's me, Tete.
Or Tim. No, that was a pleasant surprise that if he does stay, I mean, I think most people had resigned themselves to the fact that he was going to go. Where he was going to go, I don't know. It's, you're selling a midfielder with a dodgy knee who can't play two games in a week.
He has played two games.
But, and I think also on top of that, if he does stay, you've then got a mentor for those boys, because Wes has gone, looks like Martin's going, and I think that leaves what, Josh Murphy is the most experienced player at the club. It's just, you need one or two wise heads there, and especially with his experience in the Championship, if nothing else. So yeah, hopefully that's a done deal.
Hopefully it is. We'll see. In terms of Louis, I think, yeah, you do your Achilles once, and that's a career-changing injury. So to have done it twice, he literally just needs to get back playing, and then we can kind of take it from there, which it would be great to see him playing properly, most definitely. So Hillsborough, how exciting, Paddy. let's be frank. I wrote this in my six things today. The season should have finished on Saturday. What a lovely moment that would have been to finish the season. Instead, we've got Schleck up to Hillsborough. You know, they're in pretty decent form after what's been a pretty wretched season for them. Worse than Norwich's, you would argue. And Norwich don't really tend to do that well at Hillsborough. So give me something. Give me something about Sunday.
You can say goodbye to James Maddison in person.
Firstly, am I on the pitch again? Am I? I'll get the video out.
Well, I wasn't so much thinking on the pitch, but probably after the game as he boards the coach. See you next August, maybe not. Something along those lines.
Well, that's positive. That'll be good.
Other than that, well, you know, as you rightly called it, the battle for 12th slash finishing above Ipswich. Surely that's enough motivation to get you out of your bed to get to Hillsborough for 12:30 on a Sunday morning.
Pete, yes?
No, I've been before.
Right. Okay. Do you actually care if Norwich finish above Ipswich?
No.
Really?
If it was to finish top six, yeah, but 12th? Who gives a shit?
Oh, you made me beep. I like it, really. Dave, give me something.
Ipswich at home to Middlesbrough, so that's not easy in theory, but Middlesbrough are already in the playoffs, so haven't got anything to play for. They may well rest players. Forestieri has livened up, he's fit again and has given Sheffield Wednesday something, but yeah, they're guaranteed to finish below Norwich, so I don't think we're going to see much. But I've been to Hillsborough a few times with Norwich. I remember going in the FA Cup, they lost 4-1. Final day of the season when Dion and Huckaby went, that was 4-1 as well, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Despite winning 1-0, leading 1-0 even. And I think there's another time I've been to Hillsborough and they lost 4-0.
It's usually the last game of the season as well, isn't it? So I've been a couple of times and we've lost. It's not a happy place to go for Norwich fans.
So it's about time that came to an end. But it is going to be quite an exciting end to the season, isn't it? But you've got Derby and Preston fighting for that sixth place, and they play Barnsley and Burton individually, who are both battling to survive. So those two games are really going to decide things. And of course, Cardiff Fulham, second place, has gone to the final day of the season. So I guess attention's maybe elsewhere. But yeah, if you can fit, they've lost one in the last five now, Norwich, haven't they? So if you can finish the season having lost one in six, finish in the top half, finish above Ipswich, that's about all Daniel Farke can hope for at this point, as in taking positives that he can build on for pre-season.
See, it was only two wins in 15 before Saturday, and now it's what did he say? One
defeat in five.
Exactly. Well, I love statistics for that. These are quite fun games, actually, because not because of necessarily what you're watching on the pitch, but because of what's happening elsewhere. And as things filter through, you kind of you drift, don't you? I mean, remember sitting there when Man City won the title, and you know, a few, not this year, obviously, that was weeks ago and really dull, but a few years ago when Aguero obviously hit his wonderful goal. So there are 2012. There's going to be some, especially at the bottom end. I mean, are we cheering on Burton here? Because, you know, they could pull off.
You're not.
No, I'm not.
You made it quite clear what you think about Burton.
That game before New Year is the worst football match I have ever seen. It was shocking. And, you know, I've been talking about it. You know, they it was 0-0, just shocking. Just the quality was abysmal. Like, just terrible. I've seen.
Just one club.
No. Well, no, I know. Norwich played their part in it. But then, you know, the pitch was. Yeah, I'll join you now. It was just, and you're just like, well, we're basically going to put on a football match here that, you know, suits the surroundings, because it is a nice compact ground that should be in the National League. But all of this is part of the wonderful story of how Burton are surviving is miraculous. What they're doing is incredible. That story is incredible. But
you just don't like them.
No, I do like them. But that football match, I didn't like that football match. And you know, I guess it's great when you overachieve like that. But it's then at the point at which, you know, it's needs to be put out of his misery. Well, that's harsh, isn't it?
They've won three on the bounce, haven't they? So, fair. I mean, you've got to respect them for what they've done, because they are a club the size of King's Lynn, essentially, who are surviving in the Championship. But I agree with you, that game and the game here, they just made it a Sunday League dogfight, and it was horrible to watch. But that game at Burton in December, what was that, December 30th? That was Wes's last league start before Saturday.
Was it?
Yeah, and he started on the right that day, I think. That was when Marley Watkins and James Husband were on the left, weren't they? I think they pretty much sealed their failure as Norwich City players.
Yeah, Wes busy shouting at James Husband to get up after he dived in the box. Right. What a day! Actually, no, I changed my mind. It was a brilliant occasion. One we should all be thankful for.
But if they stay up, fair play. I mean, that's a real cracking achievement, but... I think I'd rather be going back to Oakwell or St Andrews than the Pirelli.
Let's be realistic. If they do stay up, those 2 points against Norwich they collected this year will have been very, very important.
It'd be quite funny to see Reading go down. and because they still very much can go down if results go against them. And Paul Clement seems to have made a complete and utter pig's ear of that job and has been rather found out as a man, a bibs, balls and cones man rather than a manager.
Remarkable against such a young Ipswich side. Well, I think we've done quite well there. Is there anything else anyone wants to say or anything I've completely missed that we should have brought up? I can't think of anything. There was a lot going on at the weekend, so we might have done.
Massive. I mean, Josh Murphy probably, it was a bit overshadowed, you know, 11th goal of the season. I think that's 7 in the league, isn't it? So, you know, his stats actually stack up, and we all know he's got a good agent. Pete did mention earlier that he would be one that if someone had a sniff, then Norwich could potentially be interested if the right money was there. I think the Mirror have mentioned him today, haven't they? Is it Swansea, Palace and Leicester they've picked from the air and said could be interested in Josh? So if any of those did say, all right, well, we fancy a bit of that, here's 8-9 million plus a few add-ons and a sell-on, Norwich may well take that.
Does Jacob's season have a bit of a bearing in that, do you think, Pat? Because he's not really set Newcastle alight.
No, funnily enough, just did something on him the other day, 20 appearances in the Premier League, but I think the majority of them are off the bench. He brought Kennedy in, Benitez, in January, which pushed him further out of the picture. I think, not so much his brother, but it might be a cautionary tale to Mr. Maddison that, you know, that there was a guy this time last year. Everything we're saying about Maddison, maybe not quite to the same degree as we've said it with Maddison, but we were saying about Jacob. You know, he'd had a similar type of... His numbers were very similar. He went off then with the 21s, had a very good tournament for England. And next thing you know, he's pitching up in a Newcastle shirt for £12 million. But end of the first season in the Premier League, you couldn't say his career's kicked on again. So it's a cautionary tale to Maddison. If he is away, then to pick the right club, because it's no guarantee that that meteoric rise will continue. I mean, you'd have to say for Jacob, it's plateaued quite alarmingly. So we'll see how he gets on next season in the Premier League. But I don't see Josh really interesting too many in the Premier League. I mean, the Palace thing, I think, is 2+2. If by all accounts, Zaha's going to be on his way for big, big money. So Palace, if they're... I suppose the speculation would go need a wide player who's around, maybe, but I'd be surprised if he's not in a Norwich shirt start next season. But then what I would say is if the penny drops and we get the Villa level of performance from him and goals, then by January we'll be talking about him in the same terms as Maddison.
And that is the perfect segue into what happens into the summer, which we will get to cover, of course, for weeks on end while there is no football, which is always enjoyable. Pete's laughing at the prospect already.
Football, World Cup.
World Cup. Well, we can't wait. Well, we'll do a special podcast on the World Cup. That'll be great. Pete.
I'm not sure if we can call it that, though, can we, on a podcast?
The World Cup. The World Cup.
Russia.
The ISS version of the World Cup.
World Cup. Brilliant. All right. Well, thanks, Pete. Thanks, Dave. Thanks, Paddy, of course. Thanks, everyone out there for listening. We appreciate your time. Pinkin.com for all kinds of news and speculation and, of course, build-up analysis to the final game of the season at Hillsborough. We can't wait. We will see you there. Until then, have a lovely week. Bye-bye.